you. I'm Cassidy Quinn, and this is Mentally Together. Because whether you can see it on the surface or not, we are all just trying to keep ourselves mentally together. And no matter what our brains are experiencing, we're not alone, we're together. What do you say to someone when they're struggling? Whether they're in physical pain or mental agony, what are the right words? Welcome to the show where I have the perfect answer and a foolproof list of exactly what to say in any situation. Did I fool you? I'm sure I did not, because you know, this is the podcast where we admit the things that we do not know how to do, the things that we're struggling with, working on, and we just talk about it. For me, talking to people about hard things is, yeah, still hard. Sure, I talk to the internet about my anxiety days, my depression, but that doesn't mean that I'm good at it in day-to-day life with close friends, family members. Let's say, for example, I hear through the old grapevine that a friend of mine is really struggling with depression. My first thought is always, oh, I should do something to help. And then immediately, my second thought is, wait, what do I do to help? What do I say? Do I even say anything? Okay, let's start with a text. Hi, friend. I'm so sorry. Shoot, should I say sorry? It's not like I made her feel this way. How about, hi, friend, you're amazing, and you've got this! Wait, okay, my friend is amazing, and I think she's got this, but I can't prove that she's got this, and that just seems like it would put a lot of pressure on her. Hi, friend, you know, I've been through my own depression days, and let me tell you exactly what works for me, because it is a magic cure. Okay, I know I wouldn't actually say that, but no, we don't need to woman-splain my friend's problems to her. Hi, friend. I hear you're feeling really shitty these days, and I just want to say I'm here for you if you ever want to talk. Is there anything I can do to help? Do you need anything? Okay, that last one felt decent, but I don't know. And that's just a text. Then there's the higher level of a phone call or, oh my gosh, face-to-face communication. And honestly, in my case, sometimes this whole process just overwhelms me to the point that I just don't do anything. Which, fun fact, definitely does not help the person struggling and just adds guilt on the person, me, not doing anything. Anyway, the reality is, as humans, no one ever teaches us how to talk about hard things. There's not just a book you get gifted on your 10th birthday that teaches you exactly what to say when someone has cancer, when someone has a mental illness, or when someone dies. One of the things that makes this so tough, I think, is that sometimes it's really hard to imagine what someone else is going through without you yourself actually going through that. Yeah, it would be awesome if we didn't have to get sick to actually know what it feels like to be sick, or have to be stuck in bed with depression to know what it feels like to have a crippling mental illness, or have to lose a loved one to know what it feels like to lose someone we love. I guess it all really boils down to empathy. Understanding, or at least attempting to understand, what it feels like to be in someone's position. How do we do that without going through it ourselves? Maybe, just a thought, it's all about listening to other people's stories and experiences that are different from our own, leaving our little bubble, even if it's sometimes just through movies or books or podcasts. My guest this week does not shy away from talking about hard things. It's Leanne Saffer. Leanne describes herself as a woman on a quest to feel it all. She's a wife, mother, fitness instructor, hairstylist, life coach, and now author. Her memoir is called Please Don't Send Me Flowers. In it, she talks about divorce, coming out, and breast cancer, all through stories that made me cry at some parts and laugh at others. Leanne wants to use her voice to help create true empathy and understanding. I'm going to read you a sentence from her website because I love this statement. I believe in raising strong women and telling the truth about hard situations, in opening conversations that society has closed, and asking questions where you were taught not to. Yes! If you're already sold, the link to buy Leanne's book is in the show notes. But still, keep listening as Leanne talks about empathy, being okay with discomfort, and even some tips for what to say and do and not do when someone you know is struggling. Let's get into it with Leanne Saffer, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I saw that you describe yourself on your website as a woman on an endless quest to feel it all, which is cool way to put it. Where does that come from?
I spent the majority of my life up until probably the age of 30, like shutting down feelings. Ooh. And not knowing how to feel and being embarrassed about feeling. And then when my world kind of turned upside down, I was like, oh shit, this feels really good. Like, I haven't cried in 10 years and I haven't loved. And so now I'm just like, oh my God, I want to experience everything and everybody and all of the feelings and their cousin's feelings. So that's where that came from. And it's very freeing to live that way, I will say.
That's awesome. And yeah, it comes with obviously good feelings. Like right now you've been cancer-free for over 2 years, right?
Yep.
Woohoo! But yeah, you know, the good feelings of being cancer-free for 2 years doesn't come without the really shitty feelings of having breast cancer. I mean, that's all part of it, right? You want to feel all of it, the good, the bad, and kind of share.
I feel like if you feel good, you have to feel bad. I always say, like, some of the biggest joys that I've ever experienced in my life came after, like, some of the biggest, like, grief and pain and shame. And so if I didn't allow myself to experience that, I would never feel like this insane amount of joy on the other side.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, breast cancer, divorce, like, now it has led you to what at least I see and everyone else sees up from the outside is a beautiful, happy marriage to your wife, Steph.
Yes.
What was I just going to ask you though? I just get distracted thinking about how wonderfully in love you guys seem.
We are very in love. It's annoying.
You have really cute girls. Everything's annoyingly cute. Along that, I've heard a lot of people describe you as, this is Leanne. She's a tiny, cute ball of sunshine. And as someone who's only seen you from the outside, I do assume that, those are all accurate things. But does that ever put pressure on you to be that all the time? Like, be a ball of sunshine?
Yeah, I think that's so interesting because I feel like that's where the internet, like, totally fucks people over. You know, we all get jealous and this and that of people that we see because their lives are perfect, but who's the one sharing all the real shit too? And I think that that's when things changed for me when I was going through treatment. And I saw, like, all of these women being like, I'm wearing pink and I have breast cancer and I'm a fighter. And I'm like, no. Like, this actually isn't how this works. Like, people come up to you and they say, you've got this, because that's all they've ever seen is these women like, lipstick, we'll handle it. And I'm miserable and I feel like shit and I have to show this side of this and I have to show my hard days so people have a better understanding and a more well-rounded understanding of, like, what this disease is. And of course, I'm always like, there is some joy in here. I'm always choosing to find that, but, like, these are my shitty moments. And it's interesting, like, having had clear scans for 2 years, like, I don't post as much anymore, but I'm like, how do I keep showing that, like, life isn't always perfect without being a downer, especially right now, because right now all we have to connect is the internet, right? Like, I'm talking to you on Zoom and I'm talking to my friends on Instagram and I'm like, I want to throw Instagram away, but it's all we have, but I don't want to bring people down. So I do struggle with that right now because I'm like, everyone's already down, but I'm kind of down. So I don't want to be like, oh, I had a great day and, like, everything's fine, because it's not.
Totally. You know, you might have a great day and then not have a great night. They all are going at the same time.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because I felt like when I started being very vulnerable on the internet, it was like before this movement of vulnerability on the internet. Mm-hmm. And so it was very, like, it felt very real and raw and authentic for me to be, like, sharing these intimate parts of my treatment. But now I don't want it to feel forced, because I feel like every time I open my phone, that's all I see. Like, I feel like as a mother, you know, or like when I blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, like, we get enough of that. So it's hard to be like, I feel like it's hard to be super genuine right now and understood in a world that's, like, so infiltrated with that right now.
Totally. And I bet even more so for people that, so, like, if someone was diagnosed with cancer in 2020, I can't even imagine the thought process of going through not only everything on yourself, but then being like, well, how do I tell people? Because it's just going to ruin their day and it's 2020 and everything sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. That is something that like a lot of, I feel like a lot of cancer patients feel. Like, it was really hard for me to know whether I should open up or not, because I'm like, I don't want to put this on other people. Does that make sense?
Totally. I'm
like,
yeah.
Everyone has their own shit. And
so
I don't need them to feel bad for
because like
me.
You are the one we should be worrying about. Like, you shouldn't have to be worrying about the rest of us. Like, I'm going to ruin their, oh no, we should be the one trying to make you feel better.
Yeah, totally. But at the same time, I didn't want that either. I was like, I don't want sympathy. I don't want you to feel bad for me. I just want to educate you so that you don't say stupid shit to cancer patients. Like,
totally. Right. Because I've heard you say you do not like the term cancer survivor.
No, right? Because that implies that it was like a winning or a losing. And if people die of cancer, it's not that they like lost this fight to something that was greater than them. You know, I think it gives the disease too much power, and I think it's very unfair. Like, I'm just a girl that had it, and now I don't, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Do you think about that a lot, or are you able to kind of put that out of your mind and move on from it, mostly?
Like, cancer as a whole?
Mm-hmm.
I do. I still have to have a lot of appointments, and I have a lot of residual crap that happens in my body from the chemo. They definitely overtreated me. So, and I'm very small. So I've had all the side effects that last forever.
Oh no.
So it sucks, because if something doesn't feel right, or there's like a lump here or a pain there, they're like, oh, it's probably your cancer coming back. And I'm like, that's not what I want to be thinking about.
No.
So it's kind of a daily practice to not go there. I really don't think about it unless I'm at my oncologist's office, which is like every 3 months, but then it follows me for a couple weeks. So I try to see her less and less, because I truly feel like I am healthy and good and clear. And I knew when I didn't feel good, and I knew when something was wrong. So yeah, I don't think about it too much.
That's good.
Thank God. Yeah.
Yes.
I don't want it to run my life.
With that, because I do love how open you are, not only about your experiences, but also about how a lot of us maybe assume a way to react is the right way. Like you said, oh yeah, like, we've got our pink ribbons for you, Leanne. Like, we're going to go on this breast cancer march. You're so strong. You've got this. You're amazing. And that seems, on the surface, without seeing any of your posts really before that, I would think, yeah, that's exactly how I want to react. Like, it's just total support and telling them they're powerful and they can do this. But you have been very open that that is not helpful, really. What are the ways that people have reacted, and things that people did say to you throughout the process and now, that have helped?
Yeah. I mean, I'll start with saying why I don't think that's helpful. I don't think that you should say the same thing that to somebody that's fighting for their life that you would say to somebody that's running a 5K.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you're so strong, you got this. Like, of course they fucking can run this mile, but like, I don't know if I've got this.
No,
I felt like
it's not
put
up
so
to
much
you.
Pressure on me. Yeah, I felt like it pushed so much pressure on me to live and to do it a certain way. And I'm like, I could die. Like, I could die, and I'm not going to be naive to it. And I don't need to make you feel better because you thought you said the right thing.
Yeah.
So I think it just goes back to like empathy 101, which they do not teach in school, and they should.
Right.
You know, all you have to do is just kind of like humble down and be like, I am so sorry. How can I support you? Or is this helpful? Can I make you a meal? Like, do you need help with finances? Do you like prayer? Ask the questions rather than just like throwing what makes you feel better, like you did the right thing, at the person.
Totally. Again,
yeah, that should drive me crazy.
I bet.
Like, don't make me babysit your emotions. Good God.
Has that changed how you respond to people going through any kind of struggle, whether it is something both physical and mental, like cancer, or you have a friend battling depression, or anything? Has that changed how you've responded?
100%. I think if you would have asked, like, if somebody would have told me that they had cancer, or somebody died, or, you know, whatever, I would have had that same response had I not gotten cancer. So I'm like, I'm not mad at you. You're not an idiot. Like, we all do it. But I had a client recently tell me that her boyfriend's mom had suddenly passed away, and it was very tragic. And we had this same discussion because I just looked at her and I was like, I am so sorry. I don't even know what to say. And she was like, thank you for saying that. And she started going off about all of the things that people were trying to say, like maybe she's still out there, this or that, and how we just really need to like be okay with being uncomfortable. You have to be okay with discomfort, and you can't like put a Band-Aid on it by trying to fix it by saying like, maybe this or maybe that, or you're going to be fine. That makes people feel like shit and completely shut down. So it's totally changed the way that I respond to people and their traumas, and for the better, because people are like, oh, you see me. Thank you.
Yeah. I think just in general, the power of like admitting what you don't know, not just pretending. And so really when people are saying things like that, what they really mean is I don't know what to say at all. And so I'm just going to like say this thing that I've seen in a movie and okay. I commented, I did it. Instead of really it's I'm sorry. And I don't know what to say because this makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, it was the most helpful thing for me. I remember when I was diagnosed, a girl reached out to me who had also had cancer. So of course she said the right thing, but all she said was, this sucks so bad, and I'm so sorry this is happening to you. And I was like, that gave me so much strength because I felt like you saw me, and all these other people, I feel pressure to perform a certain way or have a certain outcome. And, you know, then I just got a little snippy. So I'm sorry about that. But yeah, I think the right thing to do is just, yikes, I'm so sorry. I don't even know what to say. Or like, can I offer this? Is this helpful to you? Like, ask questions.
Yeah. I've also seen you post about recently, if people are not watching the video version of this podcast, they should, because your hair looks super cute. It's almost all the way down to your shoulders. Obviously, when you went through chemo, you did shave your head. And you are also a stylist, just in general, of all things, including hair. And I've seen you post that now, like recent pictures of you are the first time that you've really recognized yourself in a while. And that is such a crazy thing for me to even fathom. What was that whole process like for you?
Man, it was so weird because I felt like going through treatment, I like had to put on this like suit of armor. And so every day I just got up and I'm like, this is what I'm doing. This is what I look like. But I think until I processed what actually happened internally, because like you lose all your hair. Like I didn't have a single eyelash, and I had my eyebrows tattooed on, so it looked like I wasn't like a dildo or a mannequin, but my head was like completely no hairs on my head, no eyelashes. And so, and you have like boils on your face and this and that, like it's so gnarly. So you don't look at yourself a lot anyway, because it's hard to look at yourself and you're kind of embarrassed. I'm like, this is what people see. And then they feel bad for me. And like, I don't want them to feel bad for me, but wigs are uncomfortable and I don't like wigs. This is what I look like. But I think until later when I actually like started to process like what that trauma was like in my body and emotionally, because I'm just like in the suit of armor trying to do this and like win for people and this and that. I think it took about a year to come out of that and really like start to look myself in the eyes again and be like, oh, like there she is. I write about this in my book, but my daughter at one point after treatment was like laying next to me in bed and she was looking at me and my hair was like kind of coming back and she looked in my eyes and she held my face in her tiny little clammy hands and she was like, there you are, mommy. She's like, you were there all along. And I was like, fuck. Aww. But she was right. Like, you just kind of put your head down and you go to work and you're like battling this thing and you don't want to look.
Yeah.
Like, so you do everything you can to look away. And, you know, whether I looked at myself or not, I wasn't going to recognize myself until I dealt with like what was happening emotionally.
Yeah.
So I think the healing that I've been doing has like really helped me see myself again. And like the hair helps, of course, but I was very shut down and very timid, you know, despite what people would see of me on a stage, because that's my job.
Yeah. Your job is to A, be in front of people, like kind of entertain them in a way, do these workout classes and be super physical. And so Yeah. Like, could you not do that for a while?
I continued to teach. I stopped doing hair, but I continued to teach because I was determined to not have people feel bad for me. And I was determined to, like, I think it was more my own mental battle. Like, no, I can do this. But it was so fucking hard. Like, those classes are so hard. I remember a time I would have chemo and then I would take the next 2 days off and then I would teach until my next chemo. But I remember, you know, my blood counts were so bad. I was like borderline blood transfusion and I still go to class, but I was super anemic and I would have to turn the lights off and like hang on to the side of the podium to make sure I didn't pass out. But I'm like, I want people to be inspired. Like, I've never seen people show up the way that they showed up for a bald chick that was kicking their ass in a class, you know? And I'm like, if we could live every day like that, we would all be living much fuller lives because it was so interesting. After I was like cleared, people would start no showing again, or they wouldn't try as hard. And it's like, no. Like, keep that momentum going. But yeah, that was really tough. I'm glad I did it. I look back and I don't know how, but yeah. I think it kept me sane and like being able to see people and yeah.
That seems like a really small but very visible view of empathy. Like, you go into a workout class and you see Leanne bald, kicking ass, like probably making everyone else feel like, I can't do this workout. Oh my gosh, I'm gonna fall.
100%.
Like, internally, like you really felt internally and physically because of what you were going through. But it's, I don't even think that necessarily clicks in people's brains, but it is kind of like, if she can do it, then I can definitely do it. And kind of giving like a, I don't have those same struggles. And so that's kind of just could be applied to empathy on a big scale. But I know that I've had that in workout classes where I'll see like a pregnant woman in there with her amazing, beautiful belly sticking out, and I'll be stopping because I'm tired and realizing, okay, if she's clearly in a lot more discomfort than I am, probably.
I mean, that's true. I got that comment all the time. Like, I wanted a late cancel, but I didn't, because if you can do it, you know, 3 days after chemo, then I can do it. And I do have to say, it's funny now, I answered the phone the other day at the studio and this chick was like, I'm supposed to come to class, but I have cramps. And I'm like, I can't deal with this right now. Like, do you know who you're talking to? And I'm like, whoa, you know, perspective. We don't know each other's stories, but I was like, So it's like still a lesson for me of like, Leanne, chill. You're not like the strongest person all the time. It's okay. People can have cramps. But I'm like, I taught during chemo. Like, you'll be fine.
You should just like have that on your shirt all the time. Like,
yeah.
Don't like, complain to me about your cramps because I did this during chemo. Thank you.
Yeah, I know. But I'm like, you know what? Empathy, Leanne, empathy. This is the whole thing. It's okay. Everyone's discomfort level is different. It's fine.
I will say that you have changed one very specific thing about, I've been reading a lot about brain plasticity lately, which sounds very weird, but it's fascinating. Like, our brains can literally change because of something, a conversation we have or something someone does or whatever. And you, in some burn cycle workout, I think you probably say it every time, but you said, like, don't say I'm dead. I'm just because I'm really, you're tired in the middle of this workout. Like, oh my God, I'm dying. Oh my gosh. And I've definitely said that a lot of times. You said, no, that is proof of you being alive and feeling alive. And every single time that I work out, and I really have for the most part always enjoyed moving my body and working out, but I still have felt I'm dying. Has that always been your perspective, or did that come from kind of having to look at death and
see it? That's exactly what it came from. I mean, I love drama. I live for the drama. So I love a dramatic
statement. As you flip your hair.
Yeah. I love a dramatic statement. But I remember I was literally laying on my bathroom floor, home alone, shivering, but so hot, like all the side effects. And I was just flipping through Instagram, because what do you do when you're just like waiting for the inevitable barf? And
or what do you do?
There were like
doing anything, and
yeah. What do you do in all of 2020? Yeah. I remember seeing quite a few people who had been probably to the same workout, and they're like, oh, "I'm dead after that. I'm dead." And I'm like, "No, I'm like literally half dead right now, and trying not to actually die, which isn't funny. What I wouldn't give to be able to move like you right now. What I wouldn't give to be able to feel the way that you feel, like that kind of fatigue versus this kind of fatigue." And I was like, oh, that really pisses me off. I just started noticing it more and more. And I'm like, no. Like, do you realize how alive you are? Like, what a gift it is to be able to push yourself that hard. Like, if I push myself that hard, I literally would die at this point. So I was like, I just got to say it. And I know it pissed a couple people off because they say it all the time, but I piss people off all the time. I'm like, you know, think about it. If you want to say it, say it. But somebody is watching you right now that is trying to live, and that doesn't feel good to them.
Ugh. So you explaining that whole thing just like sent all the chills my body. It makes so much sense. True. And once it clicks, it's so obvious. But
yeah,
it's just such a go-to, which
100%. And there's so many things like that. And I hate to be like, don't say this, don't say that. But there are a few things that you're like, think about it before you say it, or think before you speak. And, you know, can we make a different dramatic statement to get the point across that like we just did the hardest workout?
Yeah.
Or do we even have to say that like my workout was the hardest? Like, I'm happy that you worked out. Good job.
Right. I worked so hard doing this, and now I am there very tired.
A very small movement after that of people posting after their workout, I'm alive. And I'm like, well, this is the best, but it didn't stick.
Well, I think it. So thank you.
Yeah. As long as you think it, we are good.
As you may or may not know, I am a self-proclaimed crazy plant lady. But as of just a couple years ago, I was convinced I would forever be a plant killer. That is until I met the Plant Doctors. They're two women, Chelsea and Skylar, in Portland, Oregon, who love helping people and businesses figure out how to care for their plants. And they sell cute plants and adorable plant pots, too. They have brought lots of beauty into my home. They do house calls if you're here in Portland, or you can set up a virtual consultation to get their plant tips online. Do I still kill my plants sometimes? Yes, definitely. But the Plant Doctors are always there to help. Go get yourself a new plant. You deserve it. You can find them at theplantdocs.com. That's theplantdocs.com. And use the code Cassidy for 15% off your order. That's code Cassidy at theplantdocs.com. Does grocery shopping stress you out? Do you order takeout way too often? Let me tell you about something that has really helped me combat both of those things. Instacart. With my ADHD and anxiety, sometimes the whole process of figuring out what to make for dinner, then getting the ingredients, and then actually making it seems like a lot. So now I have cut out one part of that process by shopping on Instacart. I can go online and search for exactly what ingredients I need, pick out the best deals, and then wonderful human shoppers will go out into the world and hand select everything. You can even order from multiple stores at the same time. Then it's delivered to your door in as fast as 1 hour. Oh, and probably my favorite part is that all of my orders are saved in Instacart. So then the next time I order groceries, I can just click and reorder my usual stuff. It's amazing. Is it weird to say that online grocery shopping has helped my mental health? Only if it wasn't true. To get free delivery on your first order over $35, click the link in the show notes. It lets Instacart know we sent you, gets you that free delivery, and helps support our show.
Now, back to the show.
You do seem really good at, like, even in the moments where you are really tired and feeling somewhat miserable, finding, I don't know if you do it in the moment or if you do it afterwards when you're thinking about it, like, how do I put this in a post and therefore, like, sort it out in your own brain? Do you always in the moment see the good side of things, or is that a thought that comes later, if that makes sense?
I think I have a really good knack at always seeing something good, because if you can't find the good in the moment, you can always zoom all the way out and be like, well, I'm alive. So if we're not happy about that, we start there and we can whittle it down to like what the good of this situation is. But I say that in class all the time, like Thanksgiving, you know, if you don't feel like you have anything to be grateful for because 2020 has been shitting all over you, like call me, I'll help you because you're here, you know, and a lot of people aren't, you know? So, I think if anybody has a hard time finding the joy in any situation, it's like, okay, zoom out. You know, I've been in a terrible relationship. I've been in this, that, and the other, but it always went out to like, okay, but I'm here and I'm here right now. go from there, you know, and where am I going to be tomorrow? What's the end goal in this situation? And who has it worse than me? Someone always has it worse than me. So like, I can be thankful that I'm not there. So for me, it's totally easy. And that's probably annoying to people, but it's the only way to go.
I mean, okay, it's annoying because like, damn, Leanne, she went through chemo and now she has this positive outlook on life. Like, oh, she's annoying. What? No. So is gratitude like something you consciously, some people have that as part of their ritual. Like I wake up and I list three things I'm grateful for. I write it in my journal. Is that something that you do consciously?
Oh man, I wish I was that cool. I wake up and like start panicking because I'm like, oh my God, the kids need to eat and I have to do this, this, and this today. And
yep.
No, I think I'm married to a very positive person that definitely does do shit like that. So that's helpful. I was married to somebody that was so negative for 10 years. So I think that probably changed me because I was constantly trying to be positive. Mm-hmm. And maybe it became just like a practice that I don't even, it's like a subconscious. But no, I don't like journal and I don't have gratitude journals because they would end up with dust on them. And
yeah, my mom got everyone in our family a gratitude journal for Christmas a few years ago. And it was really cute. All the pages were rainbow. There were 365 pages. You'd write a gratitude every day. And hypothetically, you fold it in. And by the end of the year, the pages are folded in and make a rainbow. And I found it a little while ago and there were like four pages done. But
it's like just the color red.
Exactly. I'm like, well, rainbow started and maybe throughout my life, I'll fill these 365 pages.
Yeah. You're like, how many years do I have to finish this? God, that'd be cute for my kids. But I also tried doing something like that with them. And I don't know, our life's just super chaotic. So that's just not going to work. But I applaud people that do it because I think it's wonderful.
Well, and like you say, you don't journal and say what you're thankful for, but that's literally what you do on Instagram. And obviously you had enough journal to put it into a book. So that's a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
And so your book, when we're recording this podcast, it has not come out, but by the time it is out, like your book is done.
I do. Yeah, I'm so excited about it. I am totally nervous, but also like I'm ready to let it breathe. Like go live your life, little book, and help people where you can. And if people hate it, that's fine too. But I know it's going to help people. And I am so excited to just like get it out there. It's driving me crazy. But man, the process is so hard. I had no idea.
How long have you been? I mean, obviously it's your life. So in a way you've been working on it for however many years you've been on the earth as a human, but like actually starting, I'm going to write a book. When did that happen?
I started writing during chemo because I would do these polls every time I was sitting in the infusion center because I was there for like 9 hours at a time. I just thought it was funny because I had this like terrible divorce that took forever. And then I met the love of my life, but my family's very religious and she's a woman. And so I had to deal with all that. And then like, bam, you get cancer. But I was sitting in the infusion center and I was like, who would read a book if I wrote it called Shit You Didn't Think Would Happen to You? And it was like almost unanimous. Yes. There were two people that said no. One woman who I'm like, then don't read it. And the other one, she said it was an accident. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah. So I was like, oh, you know what? Like I was so disturbed at everything I knew about breast cancer because people had sent me, you know, I was 33 when I was diagnosed. So people had sent me like all these books from young women and it's all just fluff. And I'm like, this isn't what's happening to me. Like, this isn't my experience. This is not true or accurate or whatever. Like they're sugarcoating it to make people feel better. And mm-hmm. I don't want to do that because I felt like I would be so much better equipped for the situation had I read something real. And then I started thinking about the rest of my life. Like, okay, I essentially had to come out as gay or whatever people want to label me as because I fell in love with a woman, but I don't identify as gay. And that's really hard for people to wrap their brain around. Like, how much easier would that have been for me had I read about somebody who had to do the same thing, honestly? Or like come out to a very religious family or like gotten divorced from an abusive man. Like I've never read real stories about that. And I'm sure they're out there, but I'm like, I can help people. Yeah. Let's talk about these very uncomfortable topics in a very honest way. That's like palpable and tangible. And like, let's see what happens. So that's when I started writing. And so it's been 2 years. that I've been writing. And I wasn't going to finish it. And then quarantine happened and we lost all of our jobs. And I was like, well, that's a sign. Sit your ass down, get your computer out.
Oh my gosh. Was it cathartic or more triggering to have to kind of relive these things in your life? Oh, we got to dig it up again.
It was both. So the cancer portion, it's like three portions. And the cancer portion is the last part of the book. And it was so therapeutic. I think that's when I really processed what was happening, because I wrote it as I was finishing treatment. And so it's very raw. And you can tell that I'm just like in it. And this is actually how it feels. Like you feel like you're this person. But going back to some of these like other traumas in my life was really hard. It was so hard to write about it. It was so hard to relive it. And it was hard to navigate how to tell these people that I was going to talk about it. So I think that's also why a lot of people don't write. But I'm like, I'm not here for the easy. Like, I'm here to feel it all. So if this is what it feels like, this is what it feels like. We got to go there.
I follow this YouTuber and content creator named Iz Harris, like I-Z. And she literally released merchandise a few weeks ago that said, I'm not here to make you comfortable.
I love that.
And that's exactly what you've been saying this whole time. And I definitely fall into that trap a lot. So how did you get over feeling like you needed to make people feel comfortable?
Yeah, I mean, I say this in class all the time. I'm like, it's not about me. It's not about me. It's about us. And I was like, I just want to help other people. So if a few of us are uncomfortable for a minute and the greater good is helping thousands of people, that's what we're going to do. Like, it's all the truth. These things happen to people all the time. I just want people to feel like more human and more connected. So if I could just set my eyes on that, I'm like, oh, it's worth it. Like a little bit of my discomfort. It's like, it goes back to sitting in discomfort, being okay with it and like experiencing it gets me to that end goal. Like, we're going to do that.
Yeah. When I think of people writing books, a lot of times I kind of put them on a pedestal and I go, well, they figured everything out because you're putting it in writing. I mean, even posting something on Instagram, like if you want to change it later, you can go back and edit the caption. But in a book, you could release another version someday down the line, like updated on your 50th birthday or something. I don't know. But do you feel like you have it all figured out and you've put it into this book and it is complete?
No. And that's what's so funny, because I'm like, how does it end? Like, I'm still alive and I'm still like dealing with all this shit. Like, so how does it end?
Thank goodness. Like, Steph didn't have to finish the book for you because you do it yourself.
But it was so weird because I literally thought, I'm like, how does one end something that hasn't ended? Because all of these situations that I'm talking about are still kind of open and ongoing. So no, I don't have
which is just reality. Like, that's how, even for me with sharing my own mental health struggles, I felt like if I'm going to put it out into the world, I better have like cured my depression and know exactly how to solve it every day. And I always feel happy. And then eventually I was like, no, that's not.
Well, nobody wants that.
The process is life. Right. The
unattainable.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you got to give people like where, meet them where they're at, which is like, we're all human. Nobody's perfect. Nobody's got it all figured out. And I'm sick of people saying that they do. Like, you just don't.
No, I want to be relatable. What do you do on days where you feel like when you wake up, I'm sure sometimes you're like, yeah, I'm a badass. I'm so amazing. I've got all this. And then other days, like the cancer struggle is one thing, obviously, but then you're also just a human that has a brain that probably sometimes feels good and bad. And do you allow yourself that like, yes, I can feel shitty today, but that in perspective, like it's okay for you to complain in a way?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely have my days. You can ask my wife. I mean, that's part of it all. That's part of the human experience. So I'm open to it and it definitely happens. And it's definitely been happening more lately than not, as I'm sure it has been for everybody, as we're all stuck, like kind of being controlled in a weird way. But yeah, I have my days where I doubt everything that I'm doing and I doubt that anybody gives a shit about what I'm writing or this or that. But I'm like, okay, today I'm going to make it about me. Like, what feels good for me? And then I know that tomorrow it's going to be back for the people and it's going to be about us. So I think that's kind of how I deal with it. But I, just like anybody else, have like the most self-doubt. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I didn't go to college for this. Like, But yeah, I feel that hard, and it's a struggle for sure. I don't have an answer for that, really. It's just like day by day, I guess.
What do you do as far as self-care, maybe on those days where you're like, this is a day for me and I need to take care of myself today?
Wish I could tell you, because most of the time I'm just taking care of my children. And I'm like, oh my God, what I need is booze. Like, all I need is booze. But I don't drink that much anymore, so I can't have that. It's interesting because I have like this shit voice in my head that tells me that I'm not good enough, that I acquired in my first marriage. And that's what usually comes up on my bad days. And it's like, no matter what's going on, that's what I hear, whether it has to do with anything or not. And we did this exercise one time at a training I was at, and you basically had to write down like what that voice was. You had to write down what it said, and you had to look at it, and you had to say it over and in front of people over and over and over again until it didn't make sense anymore, because you believe it. Like when you're in it and you're moping around and you're having self-doubt, like you totally believe whatever that shitty little voice is telling you. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting there and I said, you're not good enough. You're not good enough. And it took me probably 6 minutes of saying it, and everyone's just like bawling, which is great.
And you're only reading this, like everyone's there and they're going to read theirs, but you're just reading and solo. Oh my gosh.
Like, they're like watching you process this, because they're like, what are you talking about? You're amazing. Like, you are good enough. And by the end, I just started cracking up. I was like, this is ridiculous. Of course I'm good enough. Like, because you're like, who wrote this? You know? So I do resort back to that a lot. Like, sometimes I'll just look myself in the eyes and I'll be like, you're not good enough. And I'll say it over and over and over again until it becomes hilarious, because I'm like, who the fuck am I kidding? I'm the best. You know, I talk about that in class a lot, because I do think it's a really important exercise, and it sounds so silly, but it's so powerful. You're like, no, I didn't say that. That's not true. This is a total lie. And the more that I've done it, the less that I have to do it, but it's interesting. Everybody should try it.
Yeah. That's well, I think even if sometimes for me, just saying things to my boyfriend sometimes, just because he's the person I have around all the time, obviously, and saying it out loud, then even just hearing myself say it one time, it's like, wait, that's ridiculous.
Like, who decided that was a good sentence?
Yeah. Or if my brain's going worst case scenario, like, oh my God, what if this happens? Then he'll be like, okay, what if that happens? Let's talk about it. Yeah. What if no one ever listens to this podcast? You know, that's okay, because I learned a lot from it and I had a great time doing it, you know? And if literally—
Yeah, there you go.
Nope.
There you go.
But the thoughts in the brain are real. So that's a really good way to deal with it. I like that.
Yeah, you should try it. Let me know.
Totally. Do you do any other forms of self-care that you've learned that do help you? Like, what's the best thing that you've started doing? Like, for me, if I meditate, I know it helps. I'm not very good at remembering to do it. Or working out. Obviously, you do that all the time.
Yeah, I wish I could meditate. I can't sit still. Like, my right after treatment, I was like pretty depressed. And my wife bought me the Headspace app and I just got mad. I was like, ugh, you think I need to meditate? It's not my thing yet. I know that it would be really good for me, but I'm not in a space for that yet. But working out is
everything different, works for different people.
Yeah, I would say I have to work out, and I do take days off, but that is my sanity and that is my mental health. And I think being somebody that's been through so much body trauma, like strengthening my body is kind of like my biggest, it makes me feel the best and the most ready for anything that comes my way.
And it can just make you feel powerful and prove that, like in your classes, when people are wanting to quit halfway through because it's so tiring, and then you get to the end and you did it, that definitely could inspire some confidence.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so you said there's three sections of your book. Cancer is the last one. Do you want to talk a little bit about the other two sections?
So the first section is about emotional abuse, which is what was happening in my first marriage. I got married really, really young and kind of ended up trapped in this relationship. I didn't have control over our finances, and I was being berated and manipulated and talked down to on a daily basis. But I also didn't feel like I could get out of it because I didn't have any money. I had two small children and I had religious parents that were going to tell me to go to counseling or church. Mm-hmm. So it talks a lot about that and just what it was like to go through a divorce as like the first person in our age group. It was 30 by the time it was final, and just the shame and the guilt from society. I always go back to thinking, man, if we had just been dating, nobody would have cared. If we would have had it broken up, it would have been sad, but everybody got involved. And it was horrible. So I talk about that extensively because I didn't know what it was like to be in an emotionally abusive relationship until I realized what was happening. Ooh, and I realize now why women don't talk about it. It's terrifying. And it's really hard to prove. Nobody believes you. And that's really unfortunate. And I want that to change because I know that so many women are in relationships like that. So it talks about that. And then it goes into when I met my wife and how much of a mind fuck that was, because I was like, I like men. Oh my God, she's a woman. What do I do? And the same thing, like the shame that I felt around that, because it happened so close to my divorce, and how to deal with, you know, I'm in the community, I'm in public eye, like people love to watch me and they love to talk about me. So people are talking about me. I'm trying to hide it. I'm trying to come out to my parents, who are like, when a man loves a woman and that's the only story. And all these people asking me, when did you know you were gay? And I'm like, I'm not gay. Oh my God.
I didn't know. I just know that I love this woman very much.
Yeah. It's really hard for people to understand that you don't have to put a label on it and you don't have to put somebody in a box. And I'm like, I don't know why it makes you feel better to say I'm gay, straight, bi, whatever. It doesn't matter. So we talk a lot about that and just what it was like for me to step into this world of like, okay, now I am like a part of this gay community. So how do I like fight with them, you know, for their rights? Because I never gave it a second thought as a straight woman, which is terrible. You know, like I have gay friends, whatever. I thought I was doing the right thing, but I'm like, oh no. This is like ongoing for these people and they're scared all the time and they have to come out and it's so dumb. So I talk a lot about that and then what it was like for us to like get together and how that felt, you know, with my religious family and with society and with all these people whispering about us. So those are the first two sections of the book. And then I got cancer. So
and then
round it out. Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A nice bow on it at the end. Oh my gosh. It sounds amazing. I'm excited to read it. I know a lot of people very excited to order it when it comes out. That must just feel amazing. Do you think you would write another book? Like,
yeah, I don't know. I really enjoy writing. I've always loved to write. I definitely process things better on paper, but I'm like, I don't know what I'd write about. I hope that nothing very traumatic happens to me again.
Right.
We have thought about writing. Steph and I have thought about writing a book together. Like maybe, you know, some sort of like co-parenting book when you have two moms, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I'm open to it.
Yeah.
We'll see how this one does.
Write a book full of much more happy moments.
Yeah. Well, and I have so much more to say. Like to fit all of that in one book. I mean, you should have seen my first draft. It was basically the Bible. It was so thick. So we'll see. I'm really excited.
That's amazing. That's so exciting. Congratulations.
If you're loving this episode of Mentally Together, you might be curious. What goes on behind the scenes? Which parts of the conversation were left on the cutting room floor? Well, let's talk about it over on Patreon. My patrons get to see deleted video clips from every episode and get to be the first to ask questions of each podcast guest. And every month, I host an exclusive live stream for patrons only, where we actually get to hang out and talk to each other. Not that you necessarily needed another Zoom call in your life, but this one is fun, I promise. Oh, and as one of my patrons, you get every episode of the show a day early on Sundays. You can read all about the different tiers and sign up at patreon.com/CassidyQuinn. Again, that's Patreon, patreon.com/CassidyQuinn.
Okay, I have a little speed round of questions for you.
Okay. Oh, God. Okay.
When is the last time you cried?
Oh, my God. Two nights ago when I found that video that Ellen posted about the dad dancing outside the kid's room because he had cancer and he couldn't go in for chemo. Like, I was bawling.
Oh, yeah. What about last time you just had a big belly laugh?
Oh, God. Last night, Steph and I laugh every night when we're trying to go to sleep, and it's annoying.
Perfect. What's your favorite song to work out to?
Oh, my God. That's so hard. This is a very unfair question, but I'm going to say as of this morning, well, anything by Above and Beyond, 100%. Ooh. But as of this morning, maybe like Physical by Dua Lipa.
Ooh, okay. What are you grateful for right now?
I am grateful for this house that we just moved into because it feels like a home and it's so relaxing.
Amazing. And you've got beautiful woods behind you. It looks very tranquil. What sound can calm you down or bring you joy?
Don't label me as a crazy cat lady, but probably my cat purring.
That sounds
great. It's like white noise, but also like if they're happy, then I can be happy too. I don't know.
Yeah.
So calming. Like, oh, you're calm. Cool. I should do that.
What about the smell that does the same thing? Probably not the cat, but maybe. I won't judge.
There's these candles. I don't know if they're local, but it's like tobacco and something.
Ooh.
It smells so good, and I always have one burning.
Yum. What is the best thing you do for your mental health?
Working out.
What is the worst thing you do for your mental health that you need to change, maybe?
Ooh. I mean, maybe doubting myself. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Listening to the shitty voice that tells me I'm not good enough.
Mm-hmm. When do you feel most yourself?
I feel most myself when I'm at home with my wife and kids. Yeah.
Perfect. What's your biggest guilty pleasure?
Ooh. I don't feel a lot of guilt, so I don't know.
Good.
And I don't like watch TV or anything. So,
whoa.
I don't know, probably like designer clothing, which is terrible. Ooh. And I don't buy it during COVID because nobody has any money, but I love nice things.
That's fun. Oh, my next one on here is if you wrote a biography, what would it be called? Check, already did that.
Yeah.
And it is called Please Don't Send Me Flowers.
Don't want your sympathy.
Love it. What's something you're really good at that people might not know?
Ooh, God, what am I really good at? I'm really good at lots of things. No, I'm just kidding. I'm really good at cooking.
Ooh,
like very good at cooking.
Amazing. And last one, if you had to get something tattooed on your forehead, like it's just a thing, we're all doing it now in 2030, I don't know what year it is, and you just have to get something tattooed that's a message, it can be a message to yourself or just a message that whenever people walk by, they see it and they read it. What would your forehead tattoo say?
I think it would honestly just say hello, which sounds so dumb, but I feel like people don't say hi to each other anymore, especially right now, like masks on, there's no eye contact either.
That's true. With the mask on, the forehead tattoo really becomes a useful thing.
Yeah.
I might be onto something.
You should probably just make a bunch of temporary ones to try it out and see if it sticks.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I would.
I will send you one.
I mean, I feel like people are losing their social skills right now. I don't know if you've noticed this, but definitely my kids have lost theirs and I've noticed that I've lost mine. Like where somebody will send you like a DM or even like text you and there's no hello, there's no intro. It's just like, did you blah, 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 or just spouting information. And then they go back and they're like, oh, by the way, hi. I'm like,
by the way, how are you? What's going on?
I mean, I'm doing it all the time. I'm like, I'm so sorry. Hello. Like, let's slow down. So it would be hello.
Perfect. All caps or?
Yeah, all caps with an exclamation point just for excitement.
Yes. I love it. Anything else that you want to share about your book?
Man, I don't think so. But I feel like everybody should read it, especially if you've ever known anybody that's been through trauma or is going through trauma, which is everybody. So you should read it.
Right. And where can people find you all over the internet? They can find your book, Please Don't Send Me Flowers.
Yes. And my website is just leannesoffer.com. And Leanne is L-I-A-N-N-E. And then I had to change my Instagram handle to my real name too because publishers told me that it wasn't professional to be basically anymore. So I grew up and it's just Leanne Saffer on Instagram. So
I noticed that.
I felt like I was losing a little bit of myself. I'm like, I've been basically for so long, but not so basic anymore. I'm just Leanne Saffer.
Right. You know, growing up in the world, you have a book now.
Yeah. I birthed a book. So yeah, yes. Would love to talk to anybody that comes my way.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. I'm very appreciative for you sharing all these things and teaching us all kinds of insightful things about empathy and love and just being yourself.
Still in truth. Thank you.
And thank you, wonderful human, for listening to this episode of Mentally Together. I just finished reading Leanne's book right before recording this, and it is so good. One big thing I took away from it is the fact that hard things, like big life-changing things that we struggle through, they don't necessarily disappear after they appear over, with air quotes, on the outside. Like the treatments and symptoms Leanne is still going through and will continue to go through years after the doctors told her she's cancer-free. Or with our mental health, if you go to therapy or a treatment facility or just have a breakdown on your couch, once that moment, that specific time is over, everything's not just magically perfect forever. And I think we need to remember that for ourselves and for the people around us. We need to keep checking back in, even when things seem back to normal. Because what even is normal? As for Mentally Together, we will check back in with you next Monday on another new episode. In the meantime, go do something nice for your brain today. Do a workout, think about something you're grateful for, read Leanne's book, whatever will make your day just a little bit better. Because remember, we are all just trying to keep ourselves mentally together. Together is produced, hosted, and edited by Cassidy Quinn in collaboration with Koba FM, a podcast network that is all about community, baby.